Den butik, der har lavet den på Facebook, og lavet den på alle mulige sider, og har fundet frem til en stund penge her, som er kommet helt her, optaget her, for at dele sin historie, som kommer helt fra Øst-Tyskland, Karlsruhe, for at fortælle sin historie. Jeg er very grateful to have you, and it's an honor. So, I'm looking very forward to hear your story. Thank you very much for coming.
Want anyone
to see what I have inside. I didn't want anyone to know anything about my feelings, about what I was doing. I felt very ashamed of the person that I was, of the person I had become because of losing. And I found it very, very hard to share in my first meetings. I remember the first meeting I ever came to, that was in 1995. And people had told me this is Narcotics Anonymous. And I thought, good, anonymous means I can come in and nobody will see me come in. I can just sneak in and listen to what they're going to say. And if I don't like it, I just sneak back out and nobody sees me. Nobody will notice I'm there. And I drove to this first meeting. I had a little motorbike which has a Kickstarter. I drove there and there were some people standing outside and I was so scared that I choked off the motorbike and it died down. And then I thought, if I push this Kickstarter in front of all these people, then I'll topple over with my motorbike and I will be so ashamed, so I have to get off the motorbike and go over to these people. And it was nothing like I imagined. People came to me and they said, oh, so I'm new to the meeting, welcome, welcome. And they hugged me and thought, what am I doing with you? Don't touch me. And I came to this meeting, it was about five or six people. I sat down and I think this was the first time that I heard people speak openly and without being ashamed about what they had done and what they are feeling. And they were laughing, they were looking like they are having a good time in life, like they are having a worthwhile life. They were sharing about pains and about problems. And then they were saying, yes, but I am clean and it's worth every minute of it. And I don't remember a word that was said really. I remember only the spirit that I had in this first meeting, and it was something that really made me come back. And I think this is the spirit of reading recover. This is really the spirit of recovery that we are sharing in meetings. I think I probably have much the same story of using that many of you know. I started using F14, and it was like I had found a solution. And I've heard of many people, like, they get drunk the first time and they wake up the next morning, they say, oh, this is so awful, I'm never going to do this again. And I woke up the next morning and I was feeling so awful and I said, oh wow, yesterday I need to do this again. And I think that's really what distinguishes an addict from a person who's not an addict. It was like, wow, I had a solution for my fears and my pains and my feeling that I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, I'm not whatever. At first drugs were a solution. And at first it was alcohol and then it was different kinds of drugs. And it doesn't really matter what kind of drugs we use. At some point, you get to a point where you realize that you just can't live like that anymore. And then you go on living like that. And then you say, but I'm never going to do this or that. I don't want to get arrested. I'm never going to prostitute myself. I'm never going to lie or steal or do whatever. And then you go ahead and you do just that. And then you end up in the treatment center and say, I'm never going to end up in a detox again. And then next time you end up there again. And I did all of this for several years. And I didn't know there was a way out, that there was a solution to all of this. And after a couple of years, then I was reading in my old diaries. And I read in a diary that I had written at 16, I had written, I think I should drink less. And I had to laugh really loud because I said, I knew it already. At 16, I knew that the thing that I was doing wasn't really the right thing for me, but I didn't know any different. I didn't know any people who lived clean, and especially I didn't know any people who lived clean Nu har det lejt, der er nok her. Nå, så er ended up in the treatment center and the long-term treatment, and after that I went back out and relapsed. I had two substitution program, and I got what I call clean, more or less, without certain kinds of drugs at age 30. And I was really surprised to be 30, because I always thought that I would never be 30, and I didn't want to be 30. I couldn't imagine what life had in store for me being more than 30 years old, or even being 30 years old. And then I got 30, and I was surprised to be 30, and I started thinking that maybe there might be something, just something different. And I kept meeting a guy who'd been losing with, and he told me he looked good and he looked happy and he looked like he had something that I didn't have, and he was going to the meetings, and he said, well, why don't you come to a meeting? And I thought, no way, I know everything, you know? I know everything, what are they going to tell me in a meeting? But inside, you know, I tried somehow to manage my life, and I got me back things like a job, an apartment, a relationship, and I woke up every morning and cried, and I said, why on earth am I doing this? What is it worth living for? So I went to this first meeting, and I've been coming back to the meetings since, but I didn't manage to stay clean at first. I kept thinking alcohol isn't a drug. And I didn't follow suggestions that people have, like, don't go out with the old world, don't meet your old friends, don't have alcohol in the house, and things like that. So I went to the meeting and I tried to stay clean for the day of the meeting, and then I went back and did what I always did. And somehow I didn't. It took me 1.5 years of continuous relapses to realize that just going to the meetings and listening to what people are saying isn't enough. It takes a little more, it takes something different for me to really stay clean. And I didn't know what it was. But the last time I relapsed was going to a motorbike party somewhere in Italy, and we were sleeping outside in the tents, and I got really, really drunk, like you usually do if you go to this kind of party. I got really drunk, and I woke up early in the morning, like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was lying halfway outside of my tent, naked. And it didn't take me a lot of fantasy to imagine what might have happened and how I got there, and I didn't really want to know anything about it, but I felt so much ashamed waking up in the situation. I thought I could never look into anybody's eyes again. And the next weekend there was a convention, and I wanted to go to this convention, I had a choice. Actually, I had a choice. I had a choice whether to go to this convention or whether to go to another type of this party. And I chose to go to the convention. It was about 400 kilometers away in a different town. And I got on my little motorbike and I drove off towards this convention. And about halfway, I had stopped for gas, and I wanted to look at the map where the convention is, and I found, oh shit, I didn't have a map for the convention. I didn't have the address, I only knew the town where it was. It's not a small town, it was Darmstadt. It's a town, how big is it? Well, it was not a small town anyway, I didn't have the address, so I thought, well, I can drive back home, I know I'm going to relapse. I drive on to this town, 200 kilometers, I don't know where this place is. But maybe, well, I drove on. I drove on, and shortly before this town came, I saw a road sign to this town, and on it was the NA logo, taped to the road sign. And it was really like my higher power had guided me to this convention. And when I came to this convention, I was walking up the street, I was kept looking for the road signs. Please do put road signs so that people find the convention. Yeah, so I went to this convention and the guy at the registration said, how long are you clean? And I said, well, not important. And he said, don't you remember? And I said, well, okay, let me think. And I wrote down 6 days, which was the first time that I ever wrote down the truth about my relapse and how long I was clean. And then they had the clean time countdown, and you know, they called it, I don't know if you do it here, but in Germany they call the newcomers onto the stage and give them a basic text and give them hugs and celebrate them really. And yeah, 6 days clean. So I went, who is 6 days clean? And I got up like this, up and down. And people came and wanted to drag me onto the stage, and I clung to my chair, and no way I'm going to expose myself to everybody looking at me 6 days clean. And I said, this is never going to happen to me again, never. And I stayed clean since then, and that was May 12, 1997. Important things for my recovery is working in the steps. And I come from a very small town. I think that's where I got clean, a very small town. The town is actually not so small, but we didn't have a lot of meetings. We had one meeting, and we had 2 or 5 or 7 people there. It was a very small meeting, and we didn't know anything about working the steps because nobody had any experience with that. And we also didn't know about sponsorship and things like that. But what we did do is we got the invitations for the area service committee meetings and for conventions, and we drove there. We all got into the car together and we drove to the area service committee meeting, and we drove to conventions, and that's where we heard about the steps. And we read them in the basic text, and we still didn't really know anything about how to work them. And then I went to visit my sister who lives in the United States, and I went to a meeting there, and that was a fantastic experience going to meetings in another country and seeing they are just the same as they are in Europe. Maybe they speak differently, they do things, but the meeting, the spirit of the meeting is the same thing. And they were talking about the steps and about sponsorship. And one woman said to me, what? you don't have a sponsor. I had 1.5 years clean. So you don't have a sponsor, but that's impossible. How can I not have a sponsor? I'm going to sponsor you over the internet. And we started emailing about the steps. And that was shortly after that the step working guide was published, the big, huge step working guide. I call it the double extra large step working guide. With hundreds of questions, she sent me that, and I started writing about the steps. I started writing, and I found that it's really very different if you just sit there and try to figure out on your own what a step means, or if you really go into it and write about it. And I feel that it flows from my head to my hand into my heart by writing the steps. Because if I only think about it, I forget it. I think about it now, and if you ask me tomorrow, I won't remember it. But if I write it down, it gets somehow digested inside of me. And after writing lots and lots about it, I felt that it finally arrived in my inside. And that's what I do with writing the steps. And I wrote the first step where I was 1.5 years clean, and it wasn't so much about how can I stay clean for one more day, but it was about the disasters in my life, about my relationships, of course, and about struggling how to somehow get along with life on life's terms. And I shared this with her by email with my sponsor, and the second step, and the third one. And then she said, for step four, she said, now, you should better find a sponsor in Germany, because step four is important that you share it with someone in person. And I found someone to share the fourth step in Germany, but she didn't want to take on another sponsorship, so after a while, I found my second sponsor. She's here with me now. I've been writing steps for all those years now, and we sat there before and said, she has listened to 27 steps shared by me by now. Step 9, and I can only say I love writing the steps. I love working the steps because I love seeing the change that it brings doing that. I really, this is the best way to see how things happen and how things change in your life. And so when I wrote them the first time, the first steps was really about the struggles in daily life, getting myself back together, getting to know myself, I didn't know who I am. Who is me? I thought I was a person that I never want to meet anywhere, so why should I think about who I am? So I needed to get to know me, and need to get to know me as a person who deserves a good life also, and start walking in the direction to get that. To get a good life in recovery. So the first round of steps was really about pains and things like that, and difficulties. And it took me 5 years to write all the 12 steps from the extra large step working guide. And when I finished that, I found out that this is the first time that I ever did something this big for 5 years, exclusively for the purpose of me having a better life. Yeah, something really the first time that I did something positive for myself, and I followed through with it, and I completed these 12 steps, wow, only for me to have a better life. And then I had a situation with a relationship, which was a disaster area in my life for many, many years. and I had a disaster with a relationship, and I found we need to surrender again. So I need to start again with writing with step one. And I started again writing step one and writing the next round of steps, and it was more about relationships and work. Relationships and work situations. And when I finished that, I found out that I still have, of course, areas where I wish to change or where I need to change or something. This time I feel it's more about having a better relationship with myself and other people. So this is where I also really see how the changes happen in the different ways how I work each step. The first step for me is like the first step anyway, it's something I can do every day, something I can do before coming up here and sitting down and trying to say something sensible. I need to surrender to my fears, to my perfectionism, to me as I am, to the situation. I surrender. I surrender. And the first time I surrendered was when I came to my first meeting. I didn't know I was doing step one at that time, but I think in fact I did. I went to my first meeting and I admitted that I don't know any solutions anymore and I need help. And then I continued doing a lot of first steps each time, each day that I tried to stay clean. It was like doing another step one, going to the meeting and doing another step two, asking for help, trying to find a power greater than myself, something that's going to help me get my life back together. And then I do step three by deciding that I'm going to do that. I'm going to come back, I'm going to follow through with my recovery. So, I had a hard time admitting that I needed sanity in my life. It's so, if I read what I wrote in those first steps, or if I think about how my life was, everyone looking at it from outside would see the insanity in it, but I wasn't able to see the insanity in it. I thought everything around me is insane, but I'm just trying to do what I can, but how can I do something better if everyone around me is so crazy? I didn't realize that the insanity was really in the things, in the way that I deal with situations. Like saying, I'm never going to do this again, and doing exactly this 5 minutes later. So, I heard someone say that sanity, what's sanity? I heard someone say sanity is taking an umbrella when it's raining. And that's really the best definition of sanity that I ever heard, because I never took an umbrella when it was raining. I walked outside, I got soaking wet, and I got angry at the world and the weather, and how can this awful weather cause me to have a bad day? But I didn't think that there was anything that I can change about it, but I have a choice of doing something very, very simple, like taking an umbrella. It's so easy, if you know it. But I needed people to tell me to take an umbrella. And I remember one situation where someone, where there was, well, relationships was a big disaster area. So there was this guy who was interested in me and he wanted to visit me. And I was, oh, this guy wants to visit me. And he wanted to stay at my house. And I said to a friend, I said, if he comes and I don't really, well, do you think I need to let him sleep in my bed? And she looked at me and said, you decide who sleeps in your bed. And I was amazed. I needed someone to tell me that. So think about insanity in my life. I needed someone to tell me really simple things about what I have a choice to decide and say yes or no to. Well, of course, he slept in my bed. But I do think that today I'm able to make healthier decisions than that. And that's what step three is about for me, to make healthy decisions. It helps me to make a decision. A decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. Wow, what a big wording, God, how I understand Him. And how do I turn over my will and my life? But actually, today I find it's very simple. It's about making healthy decisions in my life. It's with everything I do, I have a choice. If I want to do something negative, destructive, hurtful, painful, or if I want to try and find a solution for anything, really for anything. And I needed to understand what my higher power is. And it basically tells you that a higher power is loving and caring. And I have it with me. This is my higher power. I was trying to explain how he's called Hanuma, and this is a word thing. Like, I was told, Höhere Macht in German is the higher power. Höhere Macht is very similar in Danish. And we were driving home from a convention and we were talking about the higher power, and what are people going to think if we talk about higher power and things like that? But let's find a synonym for it. And we said, H-M, Herr Müller. So we would just talk about Herr Müller. And we kept talking about Herr Müller, and then someone gave me this little green elephant and looked at him and I said, this is Herr Müller. He's so... When I look at him, he gives me comfort and he opens my heart. And that's what my higher power is for me. And my higher power is something that maybe you don't need to describe or find a picture for it, but it's something that gives me comfort and opens my heart. And I like having nice and easy symbols for things. So I brought him with me because now I always have my higher power with me, but sometimes I don't know, sometimes I don't remember that. And it's good to be reminded. And the first contact that I made with my higher power while I was writing step three the first time, it said, the suggestion was to say a prayer every day, was to say prayers. And I thought, what am I going for? What's a prayer? I was never brought up with things like that. And the first prayer I said was a prayer of thank you. And I like that in Danish you don't say please, you say thank you instead of please. Is it true that there is no word for please? It's thank you? Yeah. So I said a thank you prayer. And I said, thank you God for my life and the joy in life I have in recovery. And even if I didn't have any joy in life at that given moment, I said thank you for it anyway. And it works. That's a serenity prayer often. And it's somehow just anything that works for me to get me in contact with those positive energies that I can choose over the negative energies. Anything that works for me to get in contact, get this huge contact. And that was really the reassurance that I needed to go on working with steps, knowing that there is something there to protect me. I had a difficult time in my life where I felt really, I'm falling. You know, if you walk on a tightrope and you don't know where the flow is, and what's going to happen if I fall, and someone says you can't fall deeper than into God's hand. And I wrote this on my bathroom mirror. You can't fall deeper than into God's hand. And it was like the picture that has been with me for years. And if I fall, there will be something to catch me, to carry me through any situation. I had this on my bathroom mirror, I don't know, for about 1.5 years, so just let you know how often I clean my bathroom mirror. And it's taken me through many steps and many situations in life, and it's also got me here. And I needed this to go on writing the steps, to write this horrible and fearful and dreadfully long inventory. But, it doesn't say write a frightfully deep analysis about yourself, it says write an honest inventory. But sometimes I think we addicts are people who are really hard on ourselves and really thorough, so we write hundreds of pages of deep, nerve-wracking analysis about ourselves. And, I wrote lots and lots, and I'm really grateful for my first sponsor who told me don't write too much, just finish writing it in 1 month. Fix the end date, and an inventory is to say what is there now. You can always write another one. And I've written other ones, so she's right, you can always write another one. It's not writing the steps for me, it's not something that I do to torture myself. People often talk about step four, about I have to find all those dreadful things that are inside of me and put them on paper, and I don't really want to know anything about it. And I used to feel like that too. But I don't write the steps to torture myself or to make things more painful. I write the steps to make my life easier, to get to know myself better, and to be more loving with myself. To know the situations where I always trip over and make the same mistakes and the same mistakes again and again, and I want to learn how to avoid that and act differently and have a better life, and that's what I do the inventory for. I wrote down all those things about guilt and shame and relationships and about my parents and about all the things I reproached them of in my childhood, and I didn't realize I was so angry. I wrote pages and pages about resentments, and it was such a relief to just write these things down, to just write things down and be able to let it go, maybe not immediately, but this opens the door to letting the things go, to write it down, look at your life and say, this is the things that I have done and that I have felt and that I feel guilt and shame about and that have been painful, and this is the way I act in relationships, and this is maybe the things that never, never work in my relationships because I keep finding the same kind of person and having the same kind of painful relationship again and again and again. I write all these things down, and then I had all these pages of things written down, and I shared them with this woman. And for me, it says I'm honest with God, myself, and one other person. So it's important to choose this one other person. I'm not going to share my inventory in a meeting or with whoever. But it's important to share it with one person that I trust, that I feel good with, to know my story. And it was the first time that I ever told someone everything. And she listened to me sharing. I don't know, we sat there several hours, and she shared some of her story, and then she listened to me, and I cried, and she handed me the tissues, and more. And in the end, she said, yes, that's what it was like. That's what your life was like. And I didn't feel that immediately, but I think it had real, real long-term effects. Just repeatedly hearing this in my mind, that someone says, yes, this is what it was like, without the judgment, without how could you, without, oh, well, if you are like that, then I'm not going to want to be your friend anymore. anything, without any judgment, just like, yes, that's what it was like. And this is what the inventory and sharing it helped me to achieve, is that today I can look back at my life and I can say, yes, this is what it was like. Lots of painful situations where I was ashamed, deeply ashamed about what I thought. I'm never going to look into anybody's eyes if ever they know that I did this, and today I can say, well, yes, this is what it was like. And by doing this, I open the door to doing it differently now, to having a different life today. And that's really the biggest gift of the steps. And of course, when I wrote all this and I thought, yes, this is what it was like, I also thought, this is what I am like. And this is what I write down in step 6. This is what I am like. My defects are, for me, the ways I behave and I think and I feel that hurt me and other people. And I don't want to do these things anymore. So I wrote down all these behaviors and ways I think and feel, and like perfectionism, feeling less than other people, not feeling lovable. Sitting here and thinking I have absolutely nothing to share. Fears, ways of treating myself and other people. I wrote all this down, and in the step working guide, the questions say, what would your life be like if you didn't have to do this anymore? And with every single one of those defects I wrote down, fantastic! My life would be great if I didn't have to do this anymore. Yeah, I don't want to feel less than anyone. I don't want to be awful, horrible perfectionist. I don't want to be all these things anymore. And then I ask myself, why don't I do it? Because it's not so easy. I can't just, if I just quit all of these behaviors and ways, I wouldn't be me anymore. What I need to do is take the pain of those ways that I am out of it. And first of course, I need help, and that's why step 7 tells me that I humbly ask God to remove my defects, because I can't. It's much the same as I couldn't remove my using, which was the biggest defect that I ever acted on. My using, that's really the... I couldn't remove it on my own. I needed help. I needed you guys, to help me not to use anymore. And it took a long time. It took me 1.5 years, it took me that to be able, even in Narcotics Anonymous, to not use anymore and to stay clean. So it's difficult with some of the defects I have on my wrist also. And I realize I need patience and I need help. I need support, and I need a lot of willingness to do things differently. It's really, this was one of my favorite steps when I wrote them the second time and the third time. Because from the huge list of defects that I had written in the first time, when I wrote them the second time, there was about half of them left. And when I wrote them the third time, there was about half of those left. But there are still some left. And there probably will always be some left, because I'm never going to be perfect. And I guess that's a good thing, because if I were perfect, I wouldn't be human. And I really want to be human. Most of all, I want to be me. Just the normal human being, like everybody else. Yeah. Og det er sådan noget. For the ages, and was the most painful ones that I wrote. The first step 8 contained about everybody who ever appeared on my resentment list, on my list of guilt and shame, on the list of relationships I ever had, and about the places I worked, about every one of them, about all my friends, about every person I ever had in contact with appeared on this list in some way or another. Because I had never learned to have a healthy relationship with anybody. I certainly harmed my family a lot. I was never able to be there for friends, to be a friend. I wasn't a good person to work with, employee or anything. I stole at my job places, I stole in shops, I lied to people, I did all kinds of harm, not only to myself, but to other people. And this was really a painful step, to write this song. I'd say the only step that I really despaired about, oh my God, how am I ever going to clean this mess up? And I'm really grateful for the people in the meetings who told me do the most important things first, amends. You don't have to do everything at once. Do the most important ones first. And everything else is the process. And for me, really, this process is a lifelong thing. And most of it is also about changing behavior. Changing behavior, how I behave with other people, how I relate with them, with my friends, if I'm there for my friends today, where I deserted them years ago, how I behave at my workplace. So I did the most important things first, and that was, of course, my family. And it took me a long time to do it, but I wrote them a letter. I wrote them a letter because my family was never people who talk a lot. We don't talk a lot. We don't talk about feelings. I think nobody ever said, I can't remember anyone ever saying affectionate things to each other in my family. So I wrote them a letter or say sorry or something like that. We just didn't say these things. And I wrote them a letter about how I was sorry about the pain that I caused them and the things that I did, and that I love them because they are my parents. And I sent them this letter. Nobody ever said anything about it. My dad said, "We received your letter." But our relationship changed. Slowly, slowly, it began to change. Before, when I went to visit my parents, I was never able to hug them. I was never able to go there and hug my parents. So I started slowly going there, and I gave them a little hug. 1 second. And at first, it was like, what are you doing? And today, when I go to visit my parents, I give them a hug. And this has changed. I can listen to my mother on the telephone and talk with her for 1 hour without us getting into a fight. And this wasn't possible. This just wasn't possible. I can visit them because I want to visit them. I can offer to be there for them today. My parents are very old, and I'm really, really, really grateful that I'm able to make amends to them while they are still alive and here. And I know that today, if my parents, when they will die, because eventually they will, I can say that I have nothing left to say that I didn't tell them already. And this is such a relief. This is such a relief to know that there's nothing open. We are like a family again. den tog jeg op i lageren. Nu kan de gifte mig. I know that acting differently with people in my recovery is something that's an ongoing process. It's not only something that I do when I'm working step 9 and that's where it takes me to the last 3 steps. Like step 10 is what I do to keep on, to just keep the recovery in my life. And I can ask myself, I can just take a couple of minutes every day and think about how my day was. So when I was first writing the step 10, I did that for a couple of weeks, and I wrote down something every day about a couple of questions. I didn't write all the, I don't know, 20 questions that the step working guide suggests. I picked out about 5 or 6 to write something every day about how my life is going. I wrote something about, do I owe amends today? And did I hurt someone or myself? Did I do someone or myself something good? What am I grateful for? I wrote something about my relationships, how my relationships have been today. And actually, today I've extended it a little bit. I also, I'm not writing it in the moment, but I take some time to think about it. Did I have fun today? I can ask myself today if I have had fun today. And yeah, I ask myself about the quality my life has today and how I'm acting with myself and other people. If I need to clean up some mess that I caused today, because I don't have to wait until I write another step 9 to say to someone that I'm sorry. As soon as I realize maybe I hurt someone, it might take me some time to get up the willingness to go there and all that, but I don't have to wait until the pile of garbage has become this high. I can go and clean it up at once. It takes a little effort and a little willingness, and sometimes it takes a little more effort and willingness. But I can clean up the mess at once, and that's what step 10 is for. And I can ask myself every day, is my life still in the quality that I want to have it? And this has changed also by writing the steps several times. You know, the first time that I wrote the steps, I just wanted my life to be more or less free of pain. And I thought that was the most that I can achieve, to not have constant pain in my life. And then I started to imagine that maybe my life could be a little bit better than that, than just the pure absence of pain. Absence of pain and disaster. Maybe it could be a little better. And today, I think my life can be good. My life can be rich and full, and I can have fun. And my idea of fun has gotten very, very different from what it was before. Thank God. Fun is really in the little things. Often enough, it's really in the little things and seeing, being aware of what is happening around me and having a smile twitch around my lips about something that I see or something that I hear and something that opens my heart or touches me. And I had to learn to see these things and to recognize them when I see them. So step 11 helped me prayer and meditation, and this is again the conscious contact with my higher power every day. And for me, when I was writing the step 11 the first time, I tried a lot of meditation things, and also during the past years, a lot of meditation and, Buddhist meditation, tizi, singing, tai chi, jogging, sitting in the nature, I don't know, all kinds of things that you can call meditation. And what I really like best is, I was reading from a Buddhist guy, he says to do things with awareness and with a smile. I really love that. He has a story in one of his books where he says he talks about washing the dishes, and he said, and then you wash the dishes like you are bathing a little Buddha. And I could really imagine this guy washing the dishes, smiling and bathing the little Buddha. In my everyday life, I'm far from that. But I'm, for example, I'm practicing to do one thing at a time. And that's a good exercise of doing things with awareness. Just doing one thing at a time, not eating and reading at the same time. I always do that. Eat and read, or brush my teeth and sit on the toilet. telephone and scribble on the paper or something. No, when I try to remember these things, I try to do just one thing at a time and one day at a time. We say that one day at a time and try to extend that to one thing at a time. And that's a lifelong exercise also, trying to do that. Well, more or less, it's just like staying in the conscious contact with those, with the positive energies and the recovery that I can also get from the meetings and get from focusing on the program and on the solution every day and try to stay in recovery, really. And then the most important thing is to practice these things in my daily life from step 12. So it never stops. It just never stops. I can practice these things in my daily life and, of course, try to pass it on to other recovering addicts, but I will never have anything to pass on if I don't go on practicing it in my daily life, because I can only give what I have. I can't give anything that I don't have. So I try to keep what I have, so that I have something to give back. And I feel I have so much to give back to this fellowship that I can never give it all back. And the weird thing is about giving it away and then you get it back, I feel I keep getting more and more and more, and then I need to give back, and I give back, so I receive even more for that, so I just need to keep giving back. And how do I do that? I've been doing service ever since I came to the meetings, from really before I got clean. I started doing service because we were a small meeting, and it was, of course, necessary that everyone did service, because our meeting would have died without people doing something from it. So I wasn't even clean, and I came back from a relapse, and people said, oh, well, maybe if you need to come back to the meeting, we're going to give you the key to the meeting. I mean, it's pretty crazy to give someone who just relapsed the key, but that's what they did, probably because nobody else wanted to take it. But I felt very honored. And I took the key, and it really made me come back to this meeting, because I had to open the door, and I had to be there on time, open this meeting, and then we made the coffee, and we drove to the area service committees all together, because that was our connection with the bigger NA. And I think if I'd only ever experienced my small meeting with these three or four people, and you always hear the same things, and it's difficult to generate recovery just from inside yourself, and I think that's the same for the meeting. So we need to reach out, we really, really need to reach out to get to recovery from outside. And we did a lot of traveling to area meetings, to the convention. It was a great time. It was a fantastic time to just get into the car and drive somewhere, or get to on a train and go to a convention and meet people from everywhere. I remember conventions where I just sat there and was crying all the time, because it was so emotional to hear all this. But NA is something so much bigger than my small home group. it's not something, and then I started traveling. This was something that was a dream that I always wanted to do, is travel to different places. But of course, I never could because I spent the money before I could leave, and I was worrying far too much where to get drugs from if I ever, well, I couldn't really. Well, I started traveling, and I found out that there are meetings everywhere, and I planned my trips along the meeting schedules in different countries. I went to India, and I looked where are the meetings in Bombay, and where are the meetings in Goa, and I had a meeting address in Kathmandu, and I didn't dare to go there because it was a culture shock. But I went to a meeting in Bangkok and in Koh Samui and places like I never dreamed of ever going, and I dreamed even less of going there to have a meeting, to meet people who are in recovery, and it makes the world such a safe place to be. Now I'm in Denmark, and I'm hearing people speak the same language here and see the 12 steps and the traditions in the same design that we have in our meetings at home. And for me, service is really the one important thing that keeps this going. The most important thing, to have the meeting doors open and to see that members are welcome in the meetings that we have. The infrastructure, everything ready to bring the message to people who need to hear it. And now I put my heart into service, really. I've done service at the area, at the region, at the EDM, and the European delegates meeting. I've done service there for the last 7 years. I stopped now and I miss it already. This is such an incredible inspiration to be there with the delegates, with people from, I don't know how many other, 22 regions all around Europe, and we all want the same thing, to help NA to grow in our country and to open the doors for members to find us. And this is such an incredible spirit that I feel there. It's like, I can't say how much it has given me for my recovery to receive this. And by going there, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. I've spent many holidays and days of work going to meetings, going to business meeting and sitting there. And sometimes people say, why are you sitting for days on end in a business meeting, spending your holidays there, and I wouldn't want to miss it. So I'm really grateful for everyone who does service, even if it's making the coffee in the meeting, see that the door is open, see that the literature is there, and see that maybe it's translated, literature translated in 60 languages of this world. It's just all people doing it in their spare time, because they want to give something back to NA, what they received, and still never give back enough, really. Yeah. And the other wonderful thing about service, or about giving back, is sponsorship. Because we can't work the steps alone. I need someone with more experience than I have to guide me through. And when I have the experience, then it is important for me to go and give that, pass that on to people who come after me. Let's know that I don't do the service at BDM anymore. I felt, well, I really miss doing this kind of service, but I have more time for my sponsors now, and they are glad. And for me, it's fantastic to give back in the way that I have received it. I had my first sponsor sponsoring me by email, and now I'm sponsoring women in other countries by email. I have a woman in Turkey and in Poland and in Italy and also in Germany, and we are writing emails, and we try to meet when we can, or we telephone or Skype, and it's incredible to have this connection that is there, even if there are 1,000 kilometers in between. And it's like, oh, I can't find words anymore. I could never understand at first why my sponsor is wasting time sitting there to listen to me tell her all the disasters of my life and crying and telling her all this mess. Why is she giving me her time? And I still can't find words for it, but I know why she does it. And I'm really grateful to her. And I'm grateful for everyone who's here making recovery possible. I have fulfilled dreams in my recovery. I have fulfilled dreams. Relationships was always a disaster area for me, and today I have a relationship for 2.5 years now with someone who is not an addict, and he knows me as a healthy, normal person. He sees me as a healthy, normal person, and that's what I have become because of that name. I have become a healthy person, a person in recovery, a person who's able to look other people in the eyes. And I used to, when I got up in the morning, I used to go look at the mirror and I stuck out my tongue at myself. And I said, "Bleh, you're shit." And today I can look at myself in the mirror and say, "It's okay." It's really okay. I'm still practicing on saying things like, "It's okay and I love myself." That's still slightly strange, but I'm getting closer. It's definitely okay to be me today, and I wouldn't have that without the program. I've got my self-esteem and my dignity back. And everything that I have in life today is because of NA. So, it's really this topic, we do recover, is every one of us can recover. I'm very, very sure of that, but we all can reach that. Very sure, and I know that we can't do it alone, so I'm grateful for everyone who is here, that you have the patience of listening to me, and I hope we will all have a good convention and take something home in our hearts from it. Thank you.